Bucky's Auto Service Centers basically had the day off yesterday because there was no one to tell you to take your car there. Or maybe they were. They probably did it half-heartedly. Did Danny do anything big for Bucky's? Did he mention 16 locations? Been around since 1948? Did he mention that?
I don't think he got that specific.
That's why Bucky's had the day off. The guys are raring and ready to go for you today. That's Tom, you want to say
he created a poem, I think, or something.
No, he
something
didn't.
To try to Lucky oh, and right. Bucky's or something.
He tried to rhyme the two. It didn't,
yeah,
I don't
it
know
didn't
it
work.
Worked.
Did
yeah.
he have Andrew come in and change the F word to the B word?
We were told to stop doing that.
I wonder why.
Always ask for forgiveness, never permission. Write that one down. All right, here we go. New study, cell phones in Washington State. Drivers is down. Apparently, they had cops peer into 23,000 some cars.
And volunteers.
Oh, boy.
Well, you think they're just dismissing the entire
yes,
study?
Yes, I am. Moving on to the next story. How about Michael Cohen? No, they peered inside 27,638 cars in 23 counties across the state and recorded which drivers were distracted for a variety of reasons, such as using cell phones, eating, fiddling with the radio, or peering into other people's cars, figuring out what they were doing to be distracted. So that of them, they said that it was the number of people that were on cell phones has dropped, right?
Yes, and that's good news because they are now enforcing it. This was a rule that it's now state law, and they didn't enforce it for a while. Now they started enforcing it. In January, they doubled the number of tickets up to 2,600 tickets per month. And because of that, people are now much more aware of it. And indeed, the law has indeed had an impact on us. We've gone from, and again, this is based on the sort of the shaky parameters of this study. And this is just sort of observational information. It dropped. It went from 6% in 2016, 2017 to 3.4%. So it's almost cut in half. And that's the good. That's the good news. What are you dismissing?
I don't believe it.
Oh, you just don't believe
I
it. Okay.
I do not believe it.
Well, the Washington State Traffic Commission will never hire you then, John, because they took this very seriously. Got hordes of volunteers to do this work.
Yeah.
They went in all these different counties. Why do you? I mean, do you not trust the homeless count at night?
No, do they also? Well, they say that that's a difficult thing to count.
That's right.
It's a
one-day
count.
They understand that, but given the parameters, I think that's so. You just think this entire study is not even worth.
I'd like to see compared to the last 3 years. I'd like to find out what day, what time, what days. Do the days vary? Did more people look at their phones on Monday than they do on Friday? With the Tom and Curly show on that day?
Yeah.
Because that can have a big effect on what people do for
you
entertainment.
Bet.
So, I mean, a lot of the variables that are included in
I
there.
I gotcha.
I just, when you...
So, anyway.
I'm just going to do just pure observation on my part. Everybody's on their phone.
Okay. Well, apparently...
At a stoplight.
Okay. Well, see, this is when the car is moving and also when it's at a stoplight.
Right.
So, it has dropped. Now... The other disturbing news out of this, of course, I guess it's less disturbing to John because he doesn't believe the first part.
I don't.
But the more disturbing part is that, yes, we have dropped our cell phone use, but apparently our other distracted aspects, like eating in the car or talking to kids in the car or something, other things that are considered distracting drivers' habits, did increase. So the question is somebody... Is there always going to be about 6% of us who are not really paying attention and it's not the cause of the cell phone? It's just, you know, the substitute for some other distraction or not. That's the danger.
Well, how about this, Tom? What they're looking for, is there a cell phone in the person's hand? I would say you could track the number of people that purchased from Amazon those things that go up onto the windshield or go onto the dash that hold the phone for you. That would be interesting to find that because that's what most people ended up doing. The cops would come by when they stopped me a couple times. Hey, get yourself a hands-free. Now, just because it's not in your hand doesn't mean you're not distracted by it.
Yes.
It's there and you can still look over at it and you're reading things or clicking through your music. It's just not in your hand. Does that make you a better driver that it's on the dash as opposed to in your hand?
Well, in this particular case, this study, this 6% to 3.4% were people that did not, that were holding their phones.
Right.
Either looking at them and all this. So putting it up. So you think that's a bogus statistic?
I don't.
By the way, just this, and they even the Washington State Traffic Commission, who stand by these results, do caution people to say, do not take the results over a one particular county seriously because they're not enough examples to make it fair. But they did say that Kitsap County saw the biggest decrease in distracted driving. It went from 20% to 4% in 1 year.
No way!
I know, exactly. And I think that, when they saw that, they go, uh-oh,
right.
Sends off all sorts of danger signals.
So. Yeah. I say that, listen, if you really want to stop it, you whack somebody for like $2,000. I mean, you just whack someone. It becomes a big story. And then you're driving down that road. You're so paranoid. If you see a cop anywhere, you would never want to do it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, nobody, no one or very few people would take the risk. The risk-reward ratio is what's my chance of getting caught and what does it cost me if I do get caught? 130-some bucks or 36 for the
and
a warning or something?
For the second offense.
Yeah. Okay.
Within 5 years. Yeah,
you got to make it bigger.
It could be, although, I mean, I have no problem with challenging the scientific value of this study, except that it probably does indicate that there has been a lessening of people on their cell phones once we started ticketing people.
So. I got some guy drove by me the other day in a pickup truck, and I was on my phone looking. I guess it was directions, and he's not a terrible sense of direction. And he drives by and beeps and then screams at me out the window, "Get off your phone!"
Ah, good for him.
You know what I ended up doing?
Flipping him off.
I raced. I dropped into another gear and pulled right up beside him. And I mean, I'm road raging.
Yeah,
on
road
this
rage. Yeah.
POS. Leave me alone. I hate people trying to teach me lessons out there. Same thing with the guy in the front in the left lane going 65. Oh, is this what 65 looks like? Screw you. You don't have to teach me anything. Move over, professor. Some of us have places to go. All right.
Anger management, John, is a good thing. You should not be getting that mad.
I realize that. I went through that process as I was racing up on the guy's bumper. Like, what am I going to do? He's in a pickup truck.
Exactly. What if he pulls a gun?
Oh, he wouldn't have a gun because he's one of these teacher guys. All right, let's see. No surprise commuters in Washington rank. Wait a minute. This is a surprise. We're dead last.
I know. In the contiguous 48, as they say, Alaska and Hawaii have the worst. But we are the worst of the 48 states all connected. And I find this, I took a Lyft in this morning and she was saying, that's amazing. You know, this is happening. I find that amazing that we're the worst. We're worse than LA and New York and all that. And she says, no. I think that's exactly right. I'm just surprised. Seattle, and she was nearly a lifelong Seattleite. And she says, traffic is so much worse now. I know it's so much worse. I get that. But you compare it to the way life is like other places. Maybe in terms of states, there's a lot of empty space in California that dissipates the problems in L.A. But, yeah, Seattle is really bad.
What were they facing? We're worse than L.A.?
These parameters I think are important. The cost of a vehicle ownership and maintenance, so whatever it costs to have a car, traffic and infrastructure, safety, and the ease of access to car dealerships, auto repair shops, and parking. There are other factors. The weird thing is, if we are the worst, the best is Oregon. So we are right. The worst and the best are right next door to each other. I find that hard to fathom.
Why is that, Tom? There's a lot of open space in Oregon, too.
No, but I just think that it would make some sense if you have contiguous states that they would have similar issues and similar problems. And I don't imagine that Oregon would have so much. They're number one. We're 48th.
But I primarily look at the Tacoma, Olympia. And then up near Bellingham, or before Bellingham, in Marysville, like Sully's choke points.
Yeah.
Like 2 hours or 2 hours to go 20-some miles. I mean, at some point, somebody, and I think it's a slow process. It's a drip, drip. I talked to a guy about a year ago. I think I told you about it. He just said, I was sitting in the car for the second hour of my life on my way into work, and I just thought, I'm done. He said, I came home, and I just said to my wife, I'm finished. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm going to either quit the job or we're going to move or something else. I can't do this. I can't waste my time.
No, I agree. And I don't think anyone who knows Seattle traffic thinks Seattle traffic is a breeze. I just find it astonishing that we can go one state south of us and have the best and we're living in the worst. Just
come on, everybody. Step up. We want to be more like Oregon. Let's see. Michael Cohen's indefinitely postpones the testimony to Congress. I thought he was supposed to testify on the 7th of February.
February, he was.
Yeah,
apparently this is all scheduled.
He says there's some problems because the president is making him feel unsafe.
I was a client of his, and you know, you're supposed to have lawyer-client privilege, but it doesn't matter because I'm a very honest person, frankly.
This is Trump with Jeannie Parrino?
Jeanine Pirro.
Whatever.
But he's in trouble on some loans and fraud and taxi cabs and stuff that I know nothing about. And in order to get a sentence reduced, he says, I have an idea. I'll give you some information on the president. Well, there is no information, but he should give information maybe on his father-in-law.
Oh. Uh-oh.
because that's the one that people want to look at, because where does that money, that's the money in the family, and I guess he didn't want to talk about his father-in-law. He's trying to get his sentence reduced, so it's pretty sad. You know, it's weak, and it's very sad to watch a thing like that. I couldn't care less.
What is his father-in-law's name?
I don't know, but you'll find out, and you'll look into it, because yeah, nobody right. knows what's going on over there.
Always makes Tom mad. I couldn't care less. Go ahead.
Yeah, no. I could care less and couldn't care less. They're completely opposite things. If you could care less, there are things that you care less
about.
I saw
you. Did you write that down?
No, I didn't, actually.
Normally you do.
Yeah,
normally that really bugs you.
No.
All right, so look up the father-in-law. Now, Cohen is saying he feels as if his family is under threat from the president, right?
Well, absolutely, because he's continued to tweet about that. Check out the father-in-law. Check out the father-in-law. But no one would ever – it took us a while to – track down. So the father-in-law is an immigrant from Ukraine, and there are suspicions or hints that he might have had mob connections. Now, they deny that all, mm-hmm. but it's like this kind of dirty money idea that he's suggesting from the president. It's just like throwing out, you know, red meat to kind mm-hmm. of, oh, well, look over there. You know, maybe we should check him out. But because he's the president, he can actually, in effect, has a Justice Department at his fingertips. This that sounds threatening, and Cohen... Do we have more?
Yeah, I have Lanny Davis,
who's the lawyer for Cohen.
Okay. He's on Good Morning America.
The last thing that Michael Cohen fears are partisan hack questions from Republicans. We expect that. Let me be very clear. The House of Representatives now has an obligation, a resolution of censure when the President of the United States indisputably intimidates and obstructs justice to prevent a witness from testifying is in order. So is a federal criminal investigation of Rudy Giuliani for witness tampering, calling out a man's father-in-law and wife in order to intimidate the witness is not fair game.
Okay, you'd have to prove that he's trying to intimidate the witness. The witness says he was intimidated, right? Is
yeah.
that all you need in order to prove that?
Well, that's I don't know if it's proof, but you have to establish a pattern, mm-hmm. and whether there's a pattern or not, it just means that Michael Cohen decides that he does not feel safe testifying before Congress about this because he thinks there's going to be retaliatory efforts. If his father-in-law is a criminal, there's no problem with investigating him. The problem is if the threat of investigating your
father stops
father's
him from testifying.
Yes,
right.
That's where the real dilemma is.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. I don't really care about Michael Cohen, what Michael Cohen says. I've already had a big story from BuzzFeed. BuzzFeed, by the way, announced today that they're cutting their staff by 15%. They're having all sorts of problems. So the BuzzFeed story turned out to be nothing, right?
No. It's not. That's not true. BuzzFeed is still standing by it, and we'll have to see if it plays itself out, whether there's something to it or not.
Uh-huh.
What we don't know is what the Mueller investigation, the Mueller prosecutorial team, what they say is inaccurate about the BuzzFeed. It was left kind of general, so we'll have to see. Eventually, things will turn out in the wash. By the way, what's interesting about this is that the House Democrats were the ones that say, well, we expect to ultimately have Michael Cohen testify. We'll subpoena him maybe if we have to.
Mm-hmm.
Before they even made their decision, because now Michael Cohen says he's not going to show up voluntarily, the Senate, mm-hmm. remember, the Senate Intelligence Committee, which is run by Republicans, they today issued a subpoena for Michael Cohen. So
I saw that.
It's interesting that both sides want to whack at him, I think.
Yes. Speaking of wanting whacks at things, Amsterdam sex business is in trouble because so many people have cell phones. Let's do a quick confession. Been there?
Been there, done that.
Wow. Save that. Don't know what the done that means. Andrew, been there, done that?
Yeah.
Amsterdam?
No.
Okay. But how about just in general? Have you just in generally been there and done that?
I have been there and I have done that, but not in Amsterdam.
Well, that's better than my drop any day.
Jacob, been there, done that?
I've been to Amsterdam. I'm not going to specify what I may or may not have done.
Uh-huh. I was a boy. I liked playing with fireworks.
All right. So what is the story coming out of Amsterdam now that we've completely screwed it up?
Amsterdam has a famous or infamous red light district. Prostitution is allowed in the city of Amsterdam, but it's only allowed in a certain district.
Mm-hmm.
And the way the women show their wares is they stand in like department store kind of windows,
mm-hmm.
and people can decide, yes, I want you, or I'll.
And the lights in those windows are red.
Yes, they are. It's literally a red light district.
Yes.
Now, one of the problems they say it's tough times for Amsterdam sex business because There's so many people now that come there as a it's like a, become a tourist attraction, especially at night. There's so many men that show up with their cell phones, with their smartphones, taking pictures that there's no room for clientele to actually make any kind of a contact, and it's ruining their business. They have, for the first time, they have a woman who's mayor of Amsterdam, and she's trying to figure out a way to address this issue. Should you restrict, you know, the number of people that can go into that district at any one time? Mm-hmm. Should you put an age limit on this? But right now, we often talk about how tourism is killing cities like Venice because too many tourists take over the town. Well, here's an example of too many tourists are not availing themselves of the wear, so to speak. They're getting in the way of the prostitution business, and so that's a concern.
I'm surprised. I guess the secret sort of bodyguards that protect that entire institution aren't better about throwing more people into the drink there, the canals. Because, Tom, you experienced it. We did, too. We got a warning from somebody regarding, we had a beta cam, big old beta cam.
Evening Magazine.
And somebody said, do not come within 500 yards of the red light district with that thing. What's it cost? We said $30,000. That will end up, they'll throw that in the canal.
Yeah. You know, it's my first experience in Europe. First time I went to Europe, I traveled with Seattle University Choir, and we did a tour of Denmark. And then after the 2 week tour was over, I went off with, I think, my cousin and two people from the choir in our first city of destination from Denmark, from Copenhagen. We took a train to Amsterdam. And so we go to Amsterdam and we arrive at night. And so we go out to the red light district because I'd heard so much about this. Mm-hmm. And I pull, like, again, this is like 100 years ago. I pull out my little Instamatic camera. Now, I was not taking a picture of an individual woman in a window. I was taking a picture of the entire scene. It looked like a picture postcard. You're right on the canal. You've got the bridge. You've got the street lamps and all. And you've got all these people milling around. And you have one woman that was standing in the front of a doorway up these steps. I mean, just a classic picture that, oh, my God. And I pull out my camera and I take a shot. And immediately, I was surrounded by three or four bikers. Mm. And they all came up and they grabbed my camera immediately and went to throw it into the canal. And I go, no, I'm just sort of screaming. Again, this is my first experience on my own in Europe. And they're yelling at me and stuff. And so we ended up, you know, sort of like half English, pig English kind of a discussion. I allowed them to take the film out of the camera and throw that in the canal and give me back my camera. But it was like, boy, did I learn my lesson. I was far enough away, I didn't see it as an identification issue. And this is long before cell phones, long before everybody had access to it.
Right.
It was a big deal. And it was shocking because you had no idea. There are enforcers all over the place. They just popped up out of nowhere. And I was shaking in my boots.
I'm sure just take one of those guys that's congregating around that window, throw one of them in the canal.
Yeah, that'll teach you.
That'll teach you.
Yeah, maybe you should write to the woman mayor of Amsterdam. I've got the perfect solution. One a night.
How about Tom with a story going down to the rest like this? How about the fact that the rest of the choir didn't go? That's not shocking.
Yeah.
Holy catfish!
That's really right, okay.
Oh, we sang great, though.
Really? What were you doing? What was the big one that brought the house down?
Oh, I can't remember, but it was for... So every July 4th, there is a town in... I forget the name of the town. A town in Denmark that celebrates the 4th of July. Uh-huh. And every year, they invite an American choir to come perform for them. And so we were there.
Wow.
In like 1975. It was fantastic.
Right back. Hey, kiddies, gather around the radio tomorrow, because Muckleshoot Bingo is going to be your The Know-It-All Quiz. That's where one lucky listener of the Tom and Curly Show gets a chance to get on the phone, to get on the air, to win fabulous prizes like... I should read this ahead of time. Like, this week, your chance to win 4 tickets to the Seattle Boat Show. It starts tomorrow and runs through Friday, February 2nd. It's at the Seattle or CenturyLink Field, South Lake Union. Find your tickets at seattleboatshow.com. When I was in grade school, being a dyslexic, I was so terrified that the teacher would scream at me that I would count the number of kids in front of me. Because the teacher would go, we're going to start, we'll read out loud, everybody gets a paragraph, we'll start with you, Avelino, because we're all alphabetical. Mm-hmm. It's Catholic school. And Avelino, near the window, would start, Mark Avelino, right? And Brian Barry, and it goes all the way down. So I would go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay, I'm the 10th kid. So I'd count the paragraphs. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And I'd get that paragraph and read it over and over and over and over and over and over again. Then the teacher would come to me, and I'd have the paragraph, most of it, I'd get it, right? sometimes the kid in front of me, Michael Canine, screwed me. And he'd be like, what? What are we doing? Excuse me? And then the teacher would go, forget it, Canine. Curly, you take Canine's paragraph. And I'd be like, yeah, I kind of had prepared for my paragraph. Oh, my God.
You know, I wonder if you could have just played along and just read your paragraph. They might not even have noticed.
Oh, you know, you did that, and they'd yell at me. Yeah. Or I'd say, sister, I would, but unfortunately, a child in a very unchristian way had torn that page asunder. I used the word asunder to show like a smoke screen. Anyway, the same thing with Muckleshoot Bingo. I probably should have read the prize ahead.
But you read super well, and I know that there are people who ask me when we talk about you and like, tell me what John Curley's like. You're... story about how you've dealt with or overcome dyslexia is really inspirational. I mean, did the teachers know at the time?
No, nobody knew. I failed fourth grade twice. Ursula, the pain of being a dyslexic in the 70s was unbelievable. They found like 8 out of 10 people that are in prison are dyslexic.
Yeah.
It's terrible what happened. Now they fix it and they catch it and everything else. They've got all sorts of stuff. But no, it was a mess.
With all sincerity, I really appreciate that you share your story.
Well, it's pretty obvious that I'm dyslexic every day. I don't know. I can't pronounce anybody's name. I don't know where the tickets are sold for the boat show. Oh, my God.
But I think we have established you should be locked up.
I love you. I love you. There was a woman named Mrs. Brown who used to come to the house every Thursday as my tutor.
Mm-hmm.
And we would walk in with this giant living room and this beautiful oriental rug. We also had an old dachshund that liked to relieve herself, number two, on that rug. But because she was so old, most of her turds were hard, dried, and encased in balloons and other things that she'd eaten. And I remember Mrs. Brown dawdling into that room, kicking dried turds in front of her. I never think to myself like, this is what I will remember more than sitting at the sitting on the couch with her, smelling the Gina Tay. Dallas Cowboys Ezekiel Elliott runs 21 miles an hour. Now, that's an amazing statistic, but now more importantly, who gets a chance to take that statistic and do something with it as more and more technology is being embedded into the players' bodies or at least onto their equipment?
I didn't realize this, that NFL players now have chip data. They have chips embedded in their uniforms so they can keep track of all sorts of pieces of information. And right now, there is a major sports emphasis, because this is true in the NBA and all sports aspects, that if you have data about your players, do the players have access to that data, or is it just the owners?
Uh-huh.
Should the players have any privacy concerns about these kinds of things? And right now there are these major panels being drawn together to determine what are the ground rules. They compare it to broadcasting rules. 50 years ago, nobody had any idea that broadcasting would really be the money that keeps these sports afloat.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to establish that 50 years ago, who had the rights and who didn't. And right now they feel like this is the information that could really determine the outcome of all sorts of individuals' lives and the sports success. And I think it does raise a lot of interesting issues. Who are we to say, if we're the owners and we know that Ezekiel Elliott runs 21 miles one year and the next year he's only running 17 miles or 18 miles an hour, if we have that information in addition to whatever stats we normally get on how many yards he's gained, can we use that in contract negotiations to his detriment?
Mm-hmm.
Or if somebody like, say, Chris Carson, our running back, wants to compare himself to Ezekiel Elliott, and they say, well, Ezekiel Elliott runs 21.7 miles. You only run at your top speed 21.2 miles, so we're not going to pay you as much. The idea is this information something that the athletes are willingly giving to their owners, or is that something that they should be able to harbor and or opt out of in terms of giving access to their personal.
Well, they've been victims and heroes of the stopwatch since the game first started being played. I mean, I remember talking to a friend of mine, Roger Scholes, who played for the Denver Broncos. He used to tell me how they could cheat in the 40. And I said, how do they do that?
Yeah.
He said, the guy 40 yards away from you is looking for your left arm or right arm to come down. Which is that's your first step out. So what you do is you take your first step out without shooting that arm out, and it gets you about a half a second or a second.
Wow, yeah.
So I was like, then the technology came in that it wasn't some guy in, a old gray sweatsuit, right? with big belly busting out and a lot of hernias that you could sort of see from the side with a stopwatch. And then it became the electronic eye that then counted the 40-yard dash. Plus, they got to do high jump and they got to do all the other stuff and bench press. So the point of someone having the information, who owns it? The people that put the chips in on your uniform own it.
Well, not if you don't. Then you don't allow for that chip to be placed on you. In other words, that's a negotiable element.
Okay, that's
because
good.
What they say is there are privacy issues. That's the one thing has to be grappled with. There are also wealth opportunities that have to be addressed too. So, for instance, if you have this information right now, MGM Resorts International, they're already paying tens of millions of dollars to have cooperation with these leagues so that they can allow for their customers to gamble on the NHL. In terms of this information, if the Dallas Cowboys, say, have information about Ezekiel Elliott that they can then sell to MGM, then they'll be able to profit from it. Should some of those profits go to the players as well, or should it just be an ownership issue? These are the kinds of things that need to be negotiated. Right now, the NBA has established that whatever information you get from these chips, you cannot use in the contract negotiations. Right now, in the NFL, you can use this information as part of a contract negotiations. So they say right now we're just trying to divvy out what the best way to proceed is.
Right. Well, if you can divvy it out and cut it off and then have somebody come back and want to buy it, then it is advantageous to the player to have it as a bargaining chip. Saying, I don't want it. Tell you what, we'll give you an extra $50,000 if you let us take the data on you.
Yes, exactly. And they say also athletic performance companies really want that data too. And they can say, okay, we can do this, push this more, push that. So it's coming down the pike. And right now they're just major advisory boards getting together to try to determine the future.
There's a question you've always probably asked yourself. What's your dog thinking about you while you're watching television? The other question is, what's your dog thinking about when you're doing something else, not watching TV? You know what I mean? What's wrong? Are we still on the air?
I didn't mean to make those
sounds. Right back. Any sponsor to mention here? I'm making any money on this one? Online Trading Academy text line. Ka-ching! 98973. Thanks, guys, for sponsoring. Give them a call. Get in touch with them. Text them, 98973. Come on in on our line, and you can tell us what you think of the show. We certainly do appreciate your questions, your comments, and your concerns. And all of you that write funny things often get read first. Sorry, that's just the way it is. Humor is the thing. I noticed that yesterday, Tom, while I was volunteering for the hospice care work that I'm going to be doing. I turned to this person next to me and said, am I the only funny person here?
You're at a hospice training program, John. It doesn't tend to attract comics.
Well, I was really...
I'm sure you're sorely disappointed. Hospice comic, that would be a nice job.
That's what I was going to say, but I decided not to. No, it was... at some point.
Yes.
I have to talk to the people there. I got to talk to Melissa. Because I said to her, hypothetically, if somebody has a show, like a radio show, 9 to noon on hypothetically Cairo 97.3 FM, could I talk about the stories of the people that I'm taking care of? She said, you have to be so careful because the bond and the intimacy that is created between you and the patient and the family, they don't want to feel that's violated in any way. So it would almost have to be like a release that the family would say yes. Because the stories that are told are quite profound, and it would, I think, advantageous for other people to hear, but you have to make sure that the person doesn't... I said I would never say the person's name or where they're from or any of that.
You'd have to kind of fictionalize it in
as much as you can.
However, I think your training alone, just hearing you talk about your training, I think would be of some interest and value.
Then we'll do that. Let's talk about the fact that your dog watches you watch television, and does the dog care, Tom?
The dog does not care about what's on television, which I find interesting because it's not a multi-sensory environment. Mm-hmm. Do we have sound on the story or
Unfortunately,
not?
Unfortunately,
no. Okay, no, that's
fine.
This is
one of Jacob's stupid animals.
So, no. Actually, this is we all have, I mean, no, we don't all have dogs, but lots of us have dogs or have had dogs. And the experience of watching television with a dog raises the issue for this particular writer of, what is the dog thinking when I'm watching TV? And they say basically the dog is bored. with TV. And that's because dogs, in order for dogs to get engaged in what's happening on the screen, they would have to have, they'd have to be able to smell it. They'd have to be able to actually use their five senses. And since TV is just a visual, it does, it has no interest for them. So what are they imagining while they're, you know, while you're on TV, while you're watching TV? They say that if you, one suggestion from Cesar, the dog whisperer, Milan, I think his name is to close your eyes and whatever you think, whatever you see at that point is what a dog sees. It's kind of like an emotional barometer about where you stand. But the interaction with the TV is secondary to what? Here's why you shouldn't just dismiss yourself as being a boring person. The dog values spending time with you. Even if you're doing nothing, they might enjoy, the dog might enjoy just hanging out with you, even if you're doing something boring, that sort of, you know, sharing of experience, even if it's a boring experience, is something of some value.
Right. They're happy that you're there, and they are relaxed that you're there because you are the one that takes care of them and feeds them and gives them protection. So they don't care that you're watching television. They don't judge you for what you're watching. They just are okay with the fact that you're there.
Yeah.
And the exact same thing occurs as well when it comes to dogs and you in the room getting it on with that special someone in your life. So I read the study in this. They said, do dogs know what's going on? They said dogs sense that someone's getting more attention than they are.
Yeah.
Which causes some people, some dogs, to bark and to get upset about it.
Yeah.
They do sense that there's action that's occurring or motion that's occurring that's not, you're not standing up. Although you could, there, I've seen the positions that allow you to do that. And I don't know how the dog would react to that. But they say the dog does not contextually, it doesn't, it's not able to understand rationally that you're having sex. It just knows that you're in the bed, that it's normally on, and there's not as much room, and someone's getting more attention. A friend of mine who has a big old golden retriever says that whenever they're having sex, that the dog comes up, barks, and then licks the side of the woman's face.
As a sign of what?
It's like,
reassurance?
Hey, are we having fun? Are we having fun now? Hey, what are you guys doing? What are you doing? What are you doing?
They do say
that's
that
the husband. Now the dog says.
Dogs do pick up on human emotions, yes, they say. So if you're watching a horror movie, they will understand that you're scared, so they probably understand when you're getting it on as well.
Hey, can I do a stupid animal story later on about why you should be scared and have your children be scared so that they'll be better and more adventurous adults?
Of course, it's Thursday.
All right, right back.